Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for joining us from the DeMarie Demo House podcast nook here at BA World Headquarters in Durham, North Carolina. When it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarie just changed the game, introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarie before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right and visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. If you haven't gone to the Demo House yet, what are you waiting for? Come on, it's May already. Buy your bat. Summer's coming up. Go play a little softball or baseball this summer. I mean, get off your duff and stop listening to podcasts and get out of the house, Aaron.
I like the extended pitch for the Demo House today. That's good.
I like the Demo House. I believe in it, and I appreciate them sponsoring Baseball America's podcast. Aaron, one of the most uneventful top 25 ranking meetings of the year, which is a good thing.
Very nice.
Little chalk. Couple. I think it also helps when teams 1 and 3 don't play on the weekend.
You're right.
That helps. We're reluctant to move teams 1 and 3 if they win their midweek game and then don't play on the weekend. I think we would have been ready if Texas had a 24-game win streak.
Yes, I think we would have done it.
But the Longhorns did not sweep Kansas State. So kudos to Kansas State. Real quick, I mean, we'll get to this obviously in the stock report later this week on BaseballAmerica.com. Does winning one game, in your experience, not necessarily specific to K-State, how much can one win help K-State when they don't win the series? Can that really help K-State get to a regional? Is that enough for a team like Kansas State that's really a bubble team?
You know, it certainly it does help amazingly. I mean, you and I believe in the value of winning weekend series, but I think that the committee does not feel as strongly about that. Example one, Oklahoma State last year. I mean, that's all
right.
You need to know.
I think when you're looking at data, like in the form of an RPI, every game is treated equally, which it shouldn't be, but they do.
And Kansas State, I'm looking right now, is 7-6 against the RPI top 50 and 7-4 against the top 100. So. The committee's going to look at those numbers, and they're going to give Kansas State a chance. And you know they are fourth place in the Big 12 right now.
Yeah, but it's a very cluster.
Yeah. They're basically tied with Oklahoma for third,
and they're basically tied with Kansas State for Texas Tech for second. They're a half game back, but they're tied in the loss column.
So I mean, it depends what what they'll do down the stretch, and their schedule is backloaded. We've been talking about this all year.
Well, they still have their big Sunflower State rivalry with Kansas,
right? Which is obviously a huge series.
Which I love that they do it like Baylor, A&M, and Texas style with one here and two there now. I think that's I believe that's new to the rivalry. I don't believe they used to always do that.
I'm not sure.
Kudos to them for doing that.
But then, of course, at Texas A&M, the final weekend, and that. I mean, I believe in A&M's talent. I think A&M's a pretty good club that's going to finish strong. So I think it's still, Kansas State's not in the clear yet. That's for sure. They're number 43 in the RPI right now. They got some work to do.
The Big 12. Let's talk about the Big 12 real quick, Aaron, since
sure.
We're on the subject. A&M still has at Oklahoma State and Kansas State. This conference, let's face it, each of the last 2 years has got an extra team in it didn't deserve. That's just the bottom line.
And you can make a case. Last year they had two teams in they didn't deserve.
Yes, you can.
I mean, I think Baylor was a more defensible choice than Oklahoma State, but I still don't think Baylor deserved to be in either.
Right. So now you have Texas, obviously. They're a one, they're a host, yada, yada. There's no other team other than maybe Oklahoma that's for sure in. Is that correct? In the Big 12? Like, for sure, 100% lead pipe lock.
I think you're right. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma, that's it. And Texas Tech, rather, is second place in the league. They're still just 4 games over 500 overall. But they have won, five straight series now? Four or five straight weekend series. I mean, Texas Tech is coming on strong, but they do need to pad that record a little bit more. They're not safe yet.
And then, so in itself, a very unusual situation. That you really only have two locks.
And yet the league will probably get five,
or
maybe six.
Correct. That's where I was headed. Is that you only have two locks, but you're probably going to get a pretty good representation from the Big 12 because there's just not enough other teams from other conferences to use the overused cliche, stepping up.
Yep.
But isn't that fair? I mean,
that's
a fair analysis.
Fair. Doing the numbers, John, it's really hard to get to 64 teams without at least five Big 12 teams because Conference USA especially still looks like a one-bid league, although Southern Miss is coming on strong, and I think Southern Miss is going to be in the discussion. That said, they're still number 60 in the RPI. That's not at large range yet.
You're not safe, for sure. You're getting on the edge of
the
discussion.
You know, last week, that league looked like a sure number one or one-bid league. Now, Southern Miss is back in the discussion. They've gotten hot. They've won 11 in a row. They just swept East Carolina. They swept Tulane last week. I think talent-wise, those are the two teams other than Rice that are the most talented in this league.
Right.
Other than Rice and Southern Miss.
I think we can read last rites to the Pirates.
Yeah, sayonara.
That season did not work out the way that the Pirate Nation thought it would. But Southern Miss, another preseason top 25 team. We had three Conference USA teams in our preseason top 25.
Yeah.
I think we thought that there was a chance of a fourth bid from this league.
Yeah, Tulane. I think we had Tulane in the preseason.
I think we did. Knowing they were very young, knowing that the team's best is really ahead of them.
Yeah.
But Tulane hasn't quite lived up to it. You have Memphis and Marshall, kind of upstarty teams, but they're not regional contenders.
No, they don't have RPIs that are even close.
Southern Miss, though. Let's talk about Southern Miss and Rice.
Yeah.
We had this question in our rankings meeting today. Have Southern Miss and Rice turned their season around because they're playing better? Have they turned their season around because they're playing in Conference USA and they're playing other lesser clubs? What's your feeling on that?
There's no question that both those teams are playing better than they were in the first half. And Southern Miss especially has, you know, we thought they'd be a pretty offensive team. They've got a pretty good nucleus of veteran guys in the middle who've mostly performed.
Right.
You know, B.A. Volmuth being the headliner. And they've got a good ace in Todd McGinnis, who's been pretty solid.
He's a good closer
in Colin Cargill.
He's a weekend starter for any team in the country,
yeah.
And he's probably a Friday/Saturday guy for most clubs.
Except maybe
UCLA and Texas. There's a couple weekend rotations he probably doesn't break into.
Yeah.
But 99% of the Division One.
Right.
Absolutely. Division One, Tom McGinnis is a Friday or Saturday guy.
Yep.
He's right in that conversation with you.
He's very competitive, very tough.
Here's a silly, stupid inside joke question. Was he Friday starter for Clemson or is he Saturday guy?
Here we go.
Anyway.
He's a Friday guy for Clemson, John.
I think he is. I think he's a hair better than Casey Harmon. So that's that. How about that? We agree on that one. That's a good
Unbelievable.
One. But yeah, to me, it seems like Southern Miss, Aaron is – en route to a regional bid here.
Yeah,
if they
I think you're right. But
if they can finish strong.
But here's where it gets tricky is they've got
play,
Rice this week.
That's it. That's the key. They have to win that series against Rice or at least not get swept.
Yeah.
And then if they win that series or if they win at least a game in that series, then they probably have to finish up with a sweep against Memphis and win a midweeker against Mississippi State. I don't know that they're a lock for a regional for sure. They're clearly not a lock, like you said, with a 60 RPI. But I think if they finish 4-2, 5-1 in the league, I think they get to 15, 16 wins in conference.
They probably
they're
going to
get in because there's just so many bids available.
They absolutely cannot get swept by Rice, and you know, they really to feel safe, I think they do need to win that series.
I think you're right. I think they win that series, and if they win each of their last two series, with the way they're finishing this 11-game win streak, I think they're going to get in.
I think you're right. And I do think that Rice is the better team, and I think Rice probably will win that series. But I would not be shocked at all if Southern Miss went in there and won that series because Southern Miss, you know, has proven, you know, that they finished strong. They've done it, seems like, every year. They did it.
Right.
Obviously, they did it last year.
Right.
It's an experienced team with Omaha, you know, experience, and they're pretty talented. They can swing the bats, and Rice doesn't pitch particularly well. I mean, I could envision a high-scoring series there.
Has Rice, and we touched on Rice, we expected they would pitch better toward the end of the season
and
as Mike Ogilla got healthy.
Yep.
And as these guys, there were some newcomers, Boogie Anagnostu,
yep.
Singrani, the left-hander.
Yeah, he's pretty much
buried in their. He hasn't really pitched in a long time. They've never straightened out Matt Evers, who we thought would need to be a key part of this.
He can't throw strikes.
He can't throw strikes.
Throw strikes if you're going to take away Graham.
Exactly. But they seem like they found some other answers, Aaron.
Yeah.
Is Rice, they've straightened things out enough to go to a regional? Do they have a shot to host, you think?
I think so. We're looking at their weekend rotation, John. I mean, all of a sudden, it looks pretty solid. I mean, Taylor Wall has put together a decent year. I mean, he's
been legit.
He's pretty good. And you know, having Ogilla back, again, that gives you that veteran guy. And Jared Rogers, another senior who's actually pitched very well lately. That's three pretty solid guys who are going to compete and give you a chance to win. On weekends, and now they've got Tyler Duffy kind of emerging in the bullpen, a freshman who can run up there to about 94 miles an hour. He's their new, I think, their go-to guy back there. So I think their pitching is good enough. I still think they're going to be dangerous in the postseason. You know, it's one of those teams that you could see getting hot and making one of those surprise Omaha runs out of pride, like, you know, Fullerton did a couple of years ago when their talent
was
down.
Nice, the 2007 Titans.
Yeah.
Well, fond memories of the 2007 Titans that caused us, they were so bad that year, caused us the next year. They're not. Old Dominion's way better than those.
Yeah,
well, not.
Exactly.
I don't think we thought they were way better, but 2 out of 3, we thought Old Dominion, Dexter Carter, big leaguer Dan Hudson,
and Anthony Schaller.
Anthony Schaller, exactly.
That didn't work out so well.
I wish I was a little bit Schaller. I wish I was a baller.
Oh,
sorry.
No.
I can't believe I just went there. I went there. The podcast has clearly gone off the rails.
Over-caffeinated John Manuel this morning.
I think I'm just properly caffeinated. But it's the Baseball America podcast. Aaron, sticking with the top 25, I'd say stock report theme, a little tumult in the top 25, in the top 10. The only tumult was really South Carolina. They lost their first SEC series. Let's touch on the Southeastern Conference, because now we have the specter of Kentucky, a team with a good RPI that has finally won a conference series. I don't think Kentucky's in the conversation yet to get a regional. I think they're every year there's an ACC or SEC team with a gaudy RPI that doesn't get in the tournament because they finished 10th or 8th
right.
or something like that in the conference. But right now you do have you had Alabama lose a series this weekend. Their league record's only 10-14. I believe right now they're on the outside looking in for Hoover for the SEC tournament. Does Alabama – how secure is Alabama, or what are their chances of being? I mean, if the season ended right now, are they the ninth team SEC
bid?
Does Kentucky have a chance to pass them? What's your take on those two teams?
It's pretty open. It's amazing that Tennessee all of a sudden has moved itself probably ahead of both of those teams.
How about Cody Rath of Hahn with 8 RBIs, I believe it was yesterday, to help Tennessee? And let's just—I guess we're kicking them when they're down. Maybe that's not nice, but Georgia. 3-19 in the league. I believe the Friday score was 25-5. They rallied
brutal.
Sunday. It is unbelievable to see where Georgia's gone in 2 years. Obviously, they've lost a lot of talent. You don't have Gordon Beckham and Rich Poitras in the middle of that lineup anymore. But that's still a talented club, and it is just stunning to see them at 13-33. You just don't expect the total implosion like they've had. But that's the worst implosion I can remember seeing from a club.
Yeah.
A preseason top 25 team that's clearly talented, all kinds of power arms, and they're a brutal, brutal club right now. And basically every SEC team wishes they could play Georgia, and Kentucky still gets to. They finish
the
season
true.
At Georgia.
A couple of things to think about. First of all, Tennessee is ahead of those two teams in the standings, but Tennessee is 45th in the RPI, whereas Alabama's 20, Kentucky's 25. That does matter.
I think it matters.
The committee does look at it. Secondly, you know, look at – I think Alabama's strongest case is that it's been pretty good, you know, against the top 100 teams in the RPI. They're
Alabama
15
here?
Yeah, Alabama 15-17 against the top 100. Kentucky is 14-20. You know, Tennessee is 12-17. So that's one thing that I think goes in Alabama's favor a little bit.
I think you have a really crucial – I mean, you can't overstate that. I think the importance of the series for Kentucky and LSU. LSU is reeling. If they were in Virginia, they'd be doing the Virginia reel. I don't know what you do in LSU. But the Tigers are reeling, and it's close to free falls.
Three straight series losses.
Two of them were sweeps.
Yep.
And then this weekend, they win the game they win 16-15 on a Friday night where, again, Anthony Renato gets hammered – and not in a good way. So LSU, it's not like they're going to lose a chance to get in the tournament here. They're still a tournament team.
Oh, of course.
But they're not going to host, I don't think,
no,
anymore.
There's no
chance they're going to host, is there?
Well, I mean, I suppose if they, you know, swept their last two series and, you know, ran through the SEC tournament, I mean, or something
right, yeah,
like
you're
that.
Right.
I mean,
the
never say never. But certainly they're on the outside looking in. I mean, I think there's five teams very clearly ahead of them now in their conference.
Look at this way.
Hosting.
They have one more conference win. Their record is one game better than Tennessee in the league.
That is unbelievable considering the way they started, the way Tennessee started.
And you look at Tennessee, their main guys are not having good years. Brian Morgado, Domo Morgado, his ERA was over 7 coming into the weekend.
Is that right?
Blake Forsythe hitting about 240. Let's put it this way: he's hitting about 200 points lower than Yasmani Grandal. If you want to put you want to put it in context, he's hitting about 200 points lower than Yasmani.
And there were scouts last year, John, and the team with Team USA that liked Forsythe the better of those two.
And they were probably on the right track. But I mean, it's amazing to me that LSU has won two games in the last 3 weeks.
It is amazing.
But I guess where I was trying to go with this SEC thing, I'll be honest with you, Aaron. I think the SEC has a shot to get 10 bids this year.
I'm not saying
it deserves it, but when you're talking about the fact that two teams that are below Tennessee in the standings, and Tennessee's playing pretty well, Stephen McCray is giving them a really nice veteran weekend presence right now. Morgado's an arm. They've got some bullpen.
Steven Groover.
Yeah, they got some offense. Todd Raleigh's, they're kind of fighting for their lives over there. And to their credit, they're winning games. I think that's why I think Kentucky beating South Carolina this weekend raises the specter of 10 SEC teams getting bids. Because I don't see a huge separation between Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama.
Yeah.
The RPI shows it. But in my mind, Tennessee's had a better, more consistent year than those two teams, especially Kentucky. They beat them head-to-head. I believe it was at Kentucky.
Tennessee is a better case than Kentucky.
Right. But they're 20 spots behind them in the RPI. If you don't know enough, if you're ignorant, and you don't pay enough attention, and frankly, that describes most members of the committee, it's not malicious, but it's hard to get enough information. When you don't have enough information, you rely on the RPI. That's the information you do have. And the RPI is telling you that there's not much separation between those teams. And, in fact, Alabama and Kentucky might be better, then you're going to take those teams. And I think it's setting up for a potential 10 SEC teams, which I think would be donkey. But I'm just throwing it out there. What say you?
You know, if everything breaks the right way and none of the, San Diego doesn't get upset, for instance, San Diego, there's no conference tournament over there. They're going to win their league, so forget that. But, if everything breaks right and none of the conference favorites that would be bubble teams, like TCU, let's say TCU wins its conference tournament.
Correct.
And that league is a two-bid league.
New Mexico.
With New Mexico as the second team or whatever. If everything goes the right way, maybe, certain other teams would have to drop off. I mean, I just think the committee would be really – I have to imagine they would be reluctant to set that precedent.
I would hope they'd be reluctant. They should have been reluctant in the first place to take a team that didn't make the conference tournament.
Yeah.
But the first year, I believe it was 2003 – they took Florida when they didn't even make the conference tournament. SEC got 9 bids. That was a precedent that they have not been able to back away from. But, right now, the SoCon is shaping up as potentially a one-bid league, maybe two.
Yeah, the Citadel.
But Citadel's backing up. Charleston, Elon, Georgia Southern, there's a big cluster there of teams. Elon maybe, I don't know if they cemented themselves, but they really helped their case by sweeping App State.
They're climbing.
They're a good team.
They're into the 40s now in the RPI.
They're not a great team, but they're a good team. Yep. I think they're an at-large team. I think that's a two-bid league. I think it could get three, but I don't think I think they have three teams that are good enough.
If all three of those teams finish fairly well, I think that they're more likely to get three than the SEC is to get 10.
I agree with you, but I think that I'm starting to get worried that there might be 10 SEC teams. That's nothing against the SEC. But I just don't think you should have a tournament where 10th place team or 9th place team, in my opinion, gets rewarded.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, let's touch really quick on the Atlantic Coast Conference with a big, not in the top 25, but the big event of the weekend, the big series of the weekend. Turns out to be, Boston College steals a game from Florida State, but Florida State does win the whole series. And then you have North Carolina that does what it needs to do and sweeps Wake Forest. First of all, that was incredibly necessary. Now, North Carolina is tied at 11-13 with NC State for the eighth and final spot in the conference tournament.
Right.
They win the tiebreaker because they won the head-to-head. Boston College is only a half game ahead of North Carolina and NC State. What's your take on that? Is North Carolina, I don't know if they're safe, but they've won 9 out of 10. They're starting to rally. They've won 7 straight games.
And now they got to go play Virginia in Charlottesville.
Exactly. I mean, what are the? The Tar Heels have obviously been to Omaha 4 straight years.
Yeah.
We didn't think they were an Omaha team coming into the year, but Matt Harvey has developed into a true ace. He's really gotten pretty darn good as this year goes on. Patrick Johnson's a nice Sunday starter, but he really wasn't a number two. But North Carolina completely devoid of right-handed power. Although Levi Michael started to get hot a little bit, which is big for their offense. How do they compare with BC and NC State?
Two things. First, North Carolina against the top 25. 1-9.
Goo.
North Carolina against the RPI top 50, 4-11.
That's not helping their case. If they're on the bubble, those are the kind of numbers that put you on the wrong side.
And if they don't make the ACC tournament, there's no way they're going to get an at-large bid with those numbers.
I think you're right.
And frankly, NC State still has the easier road, slightly easier road in my opinion.
Their RPI is much worse.
Yes. And NC State is not going to get a bid. I mean, they're 66 in the RPI now. I just don't see it. I mean, they're 6-14 against the top 50.
But those do include wins against two wins against Georgia Tech, one win against Miami, two wins
against Virginia.
I mean, it's
they've got their resume to me is more impressive than North Carolina's. They've got better quality wins.
See, and that's the thing is they've played a lot of bad teams. There's no question about that. But where the RPI in my mind does a disservice is that matters just as much.
Yeah.
As the fact that that cancels out beating good teams.
Yeah.
I don't think that is reality. I think that you know more to me about a team that, yes, they were at home, but Virginia and Georgia Tech have gone on the road and beaten a lot of good teams.
Yeah.
And won series against a lot of good teams on the road, and they couldn't do it at NC State, which at its best, NC State has shown they can play with some of the best teams in the country. And to
Absolutely.
Me, North Carolina has not shown that, or has not shown that to as great a degree. Their best series win is at Clemson.
That's right.
So, and then I guess Boston College, there's not really a chance of them getting an at-large bid, is there? I mean, North Carolina really has to not get swept by Virginia, and then has to win a home series against a very tough, battle-tested Virginia Tech team that has, you know, taken on all comers and won pretty much every has won series against what, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Miami. I mean, and lost 2 out of 3 to Virginia, but played them head-to-head. You know, played them tough. So Virginia Tech's resume very strong.
Now BC, I think, has to play Georgia Tech coming up still.
And UConn, a midweek game against UConn, which is not going to be easy.
Right. So I mean, that's a tough series. I think NC State has they've got Duke and Florida State, if I recall, left on the schedule. I think that's right. Yeah. So I mean, I think that out of those three teams, I do think that State, because the Duke series is winnable, whereas you know I think the other two series for Carolina will be harder. And I don't expect BC to beat Georgia Tech. I guess that's how it breaks down for me. I think State has the inside track.
Even though their RPI is a lot. Look, isn't North Carolina's
the inside track, I'm talking about the ACC tournament.
Right. I think NC State has a shot. I still think even with their RPI down at 66, I still think they have a shot. If they win those, if they go 4-2 there.
If they beat Florida State, I think that's what it comes down to.
Right.
If
they win a game from Florida State and they go 4-2 and they're 15-15 in the league and they have an RPI in the 50-ish range.
I don't think it'll be enough.
60-ish range? You don't think that'll
be enough? Duke, to me, is the model. Duke last year had a couple of series wins like that. They won a series against North Carolina and somebody else who was really good last year that I forget. Duke had a couple of quality series wins, finished about 500 in the league, didn't get in because the RPI was too low.
I think you're right. I think NC State is the Duke model. So now we're looking at the ACC as a potential 7-bid league. So opposed to 8. Right.
I mean, that's if North Carolina gets into the conference tournament for
me. Right.
I mean, and BC, by the way, is 4-17 against the top 50.
Yeah, not good. Those are not good numbers. So where do you get 64 teams? I'm coming right back to.
You have to tune in to tomorrow's stock report to find out.
I'm coming right back though to your SEC 10 teams being a potential.
I think the SoCon has a chance to get 3. I think the Sun Belt has a chance to get 3, even though it's hard to figure out which 3.
Right.
Florida Atlantic and Louisiana Lafayette right now look like the two safest bets in the Sun Belt.
Western Kentucky backing up significantly.
They're
I don't think they're going to get in.
Right now, I think it looks like South Alabama maybe is the team that has some momentum. But, I mean, they're 58 in the RPI, so, I mean, I don't know.
Two good bets, and then throw a rock in the air, you'll hit someone guilty.
Yeah.
That's your U2 quote of the day. Last thing I want to note. Fresno State doing their usual end of the season. Okay,
that.
Here we come. We remember we're Fresno State, only a half game back now in the WAC of New Mexico State. Now, this league has a tournament still, correct? Unlike
yes,
the West Coast
right.
Conference, but New Mexico State gets swept by Fresno.
That's amazing.
Is there are any of those teams at large potentials there?
No,
didn't think so. Wanted to make sure. That's basically a one bid.
That is a one bid league. Yep.
Welcome to the top 25, Pittsburgh.
How about that?
First time, I believe, for the Pirates in the Air and Fit Administration. Anyway.
Certainly in the Air and Fit Administration.
I don't know that we've ever had the Pitt Panthers in.
We'll have to ask Jim Schoenert. I'm sure they have that research for us at the end of the show.
Dave Wanstead, not even involved. So congratulations to Joe Leonard and I forget the coach's name. Joe Jordan is the scouting director for the Baltimore Orioles. But so Pitt, we have two Big East teams in the top 25. Three big.
UConn.
Oh yeah, I forgot about UConn. So I think we think that's a three bid league as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Pitt to me, the reason that they're in and Liberty, for instance, is not, is that Pitt has won a series against Louisville, split a series with UConn. Those are two quality teams that they've played, and they're tied for second, I believe, with Louisville, a half game behind. Or no, they're a full game behind UConn.
Right.
In the Big East, I mean, Pitt's played pretty well. They've been consistent. Liberty has a gaudy record and is playing well, is hot right now, but they haven't beaten any good teams yet.
Only the rest of the Big South could, beat somebody. But when you have two teams at the top of the league that are playing this weekend, and Liberty and Coastal have a combined 3 losses in the league, all of them to Liberty, but Liberty's still 18-3 in the league. And you've seen Liberty. I mean, they're a solid team, but when they were on the field against Duke, that was pretty even, and Duke won both games.
I believe that's right.
Yeah, I mean, there are midweek games, but you know, no one's talking about Duke as an at-large team.
Right.
And Liberty, so, I mean, there's some things for them to overcome, I guess.
But I think, I mean, certainly if they, you know, if they have a good showing against Coastal Carolina, that series is at home for Liberty. That's a real opportunity for them to make a statement. I don't expect that to happen, though, because Coastal is really, really good.
Coastal is very, very good. Speed, pitching.
Power,
they've
pitching.
They've got a little bit of everything. That's a it was 2 years early on Coastal as my Omaha sleeper. But there's really nothing sleeper about them. Were they?
No.
Preseason number 12.
I think that's right.
So Coastal Carolina definitely getting it done. Before we go, I did want to read Matthew's email to on May 2nd to podcast@baseballamerica.com. And Matthew just wanted to say, a longtime listener, first-time commenter, could not have enjoyed the discussion on this week's podcast regarding the fastball anymore. This is what sets BA apart from other sites. I can get the numbers anywhere, but no one else is talking about the mechanics of baseball in such rewarding depth. I learned a lot, and I thank you and JJ. Looking forward to picking up the issue, and would love to see Baseball America do even more features on the technical side of pitching, hitting, fielding, etc. So regards, Matthew Legrone. At the University of Delaware. So, Matthew, on behalf of J.J. Cooper, also enjoyed your email. Thanks. And you can send those kind of emails in if you want to praise or criticize Aaron and my work here on the
Just don't use the
words
bias or...
Actually, now people are going to use them.
Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have said that.
That's right. But if you have email questions for us, podcast@baseballamerica.com is the email address, or you can always go to Facebook, facebook.com/baseballamerica. Or you can follow Aaron Fitt on Twitter, it's at Aaron Fitt. On Twitter.
That's right.
Anything else, Aaron?
I'm done, John. It's a good podcast.
Yeah, and quicker than usual. But we'll wrap up the podcast by reminding you that when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right. Visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at DeMarini.com/Demo House. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.